crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nuchtigal, coming to you, of course, from Jerusalem, Israel. My father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. That's what Elisha the prophet cried as he witnessed his mentor Elijah being taken up in a fiery chariot. Sounds fantastic, but is it true? Did that really happen? Our guest today via Skype is archaeologist and author Christopher Reams, and he says that while there isn't scientific evidence just yet of that incident, the account surrounding Elisha's life accurately portrays the regional diplomacy battles and locations of the time period. Christopher Reams, thank you for joining us today.
No problem. Good to be here.
So Elisha the prophet isn't really one of the more famous biblical characters, and yet you chose to cover him in a really in-depth way in an article on Watch Jerusalem, detailing some of the archaeological discoveries related to his time period and him. I wonder why, if you could just at the top, just elaborate a little bit on what led you to choose Elisha for this piece.
Well, the key thing that led me to choose Elisha was the discovery of a pottery shard, actually a couple of pottery shards, on which were translated the name Elisha. Now this name's slightly broken on it, and but it can be translated quite remarkably as the name Elisha, and you'll see a reconstruction of that for my piece on our website, Watch Jerusalem. So that really led things off for me. Now, this pottery piece doesn't conclusively refer to the Elisha of the Bible, but I think you'll find, as the article explains, it's quite likely that it does reference Elisha the prophet. And so this was kind of the starting point for me, and I built the article around this and then started to research into more of the discoveries that have been made surrounding the century in which Elisha lived. And I myself was quite surprised just the volume of artifacts that have been uncovered that reveal the details of Elisha's life. And perhaps there are artifacts that don't mention Elisha, but when you look in the biblical record, you see Elisha was wrapped right up in those moments throughout the 9th century BC, between 900 and 800 BC.
Okay, so let's stick with this artifact that you're saying says, likely mentions the actual prophet Elisha. There's a picture of it here in this article that people can go to, and we've done it up here so you can see the ancient Hebrew script. It does say Elisha, part of it's broken, but you say that even though we don't have his last name there written on it, that this is likely the actual Elisha. What other proof do you have for this being the case?
Okay, sure. Well, to give the full story of this this name inscription that was found, it was found during excavations at Tel Rehov under the director Amichai Mazar. And he led his crew to excavate here in this biblical city. And this pottery shard was turned up, and it was written in red ink, basically on pottery, and it dates to the 9th century, right smack bang in the middle, around 850 BC. Now, this is directly within the time that Elisha was operating. Now, so not only have you got the match with the name and the century, but also we read from the Bible that Elisha was working very much through this specific area. Actually, he was only born 7 miles away from the site in Avil Mahola.
So where is Tel Rehov, just for a bit of geography?
Tel Rehov is near the Jordan River, closer up towards the Sea of Galilee rather than the Dead Sea in the south. So it's within the northern kingdom of Israel, within those borders. And we know Elisha was the prophet to the northern kingdom of Israel. He didn't have too much to do with the southern kingdom of Judah. So it's more up in the northern halfway up the northern kingdom of Israel there, somewhat south to the Sea of Galilee. So you've got this ancient biblical location, Rehov, and that itself has been found as Tel Rehov now. It's being excavated. And so dating to this very period, you have the name Elisha that has been found, dating to Elisha's period. Another point that is of interest is that the Bible describes Elisha spent so much time in this general area that a woman living in Shunem, which is really close by to Tel Rehov, actually built a chamber for Elisha, a room for him, because he was just going back and forth past her house so often. So we know Elisha was in the area constantly. Another thing that points this to being the actual Elisha is a couple of inscriptions were found close by bearing the name Nimshi on it. Now, we also know from the Bible that Elisha instructed his disciple to go and ordain the grandson of Nimshi, Jehu, to be king over Israel. So you've got this connection between the names Nimshi and Elisha in the Bible. And then on top of that, we know that based on current knowledge, the name Elisha itself is quite rare in ancient Israel. Based on inscriptions, on the Bible itself, on the records that we have, it was a very rare name, a rare Israelite name. So it all points to this being the actual Elisha. And there's one more point, an interesting thing about where within the city the Elisha name was found. It was found within a building that had two entrances that led it out into the street. So this is unusual as well. Usually a private place would only have one entrance into the street. So you've got a public building, and within this public building, you have large vessels that were found. Now, this also indicates the public nature of the building. So we can perhaps speculate that if this indeed was the Elisha, maybe this was a meeting hall, maybe a meeting place for his disciples to come and hear him speak. So a lot of interesting tidbits that when you put them together, it really starts to put together a convincing image of that this may have been the prophet Elisha himself.
Yeah, it is interesting when you put it that way, that you could say that all those bits of evidence are circumstantial, but when it fits so well, and as each bit of circumstantial evidence does build, it forms a body of evidence that gives weight to this argument for sure that this was the prophet Elisha. And this was only excavated recently, right, in the past decade. I think I went to Tel Rehov when Amar HaMizar was excavating there back in, I think it was 2007 or 2008. This site, I don't think he had discovered this Elisha inscription at that point, though. But it's ended up being quite famous for the beehives that were found there as well. And of course, people understand that the Bible talks about Israel, Canaan being a land of milk and honey. And this is definitely an instance where we have ancient honey hives at a commercial level, which again, we have some photos of that, which people can see in this article. So this looks like it's Elisha, this inscription, but then through this piece, you really document quite well the nation of Israel itself, the northern kingdom, and how he relates to the kings of the northern kingdom, but also the Syrian nation as well. I wonder if you can just give a little bit of the background to Elisha and probably touch on Elijah's life as well, and what's been discovered really correlating between the biblical text and archaeology and showing us that that relationship there.
Sure. Well, as I document in the article, really things get going with Elijah the prophet. We have to go to him first and the situation leading up to Elisha being ordained as prophet. And so Elijah himself was on the run at this point from Queen Jezebel. She was the queen of the northern kingdom of Israel, the wife of King Ahab. And both of these characters have interesting artifacts that correlate to them. Israelite King Ahab has been proved by archaeology. His name is listed on the Kirk monolith. I actually visited that last week, an amazing big monolith displayed at the British Museum. And then his wife, Queen Jezebel, has had her name turned up on the antiquities market. So it wasn't discovered in a scientific investigation, but from the looks of this artifact and from the research that's been done, it certainly does look like an authentic piece with the name Jezebel written on it. It's a royal stamp seal that has been found with various depictions of it. And so you have these two references to King Ahab and then one to Queen Jezebel, one for sure attested to archaeologically to King Ahab. And while it isn't certain yet about Queen Jezebel, it looks very much like an authentic piece. And so Elijah was on the run, essentially, especially from Queen Jezebel. He had just had the display on Mount Carmel where God rained down the fire on Elijah's altar and swallowed up the sacrifice there. And the prophets of Baal had been killed. And so now Queen Jezebel was furious. So Elijah had a really tough moment in his life. He was depressed. He was sent to Sinai, and God basically instructed him there to go and ordain Elisha as the prophet to replace him, among other things. And so Elijah found Elisha plowing a field behind a long line of oxen. Elisha had grown up as a farmer, and so at that moment Elijah ordained Elisha as his next as the person to take over from him. Now there's a break in the biblical story with Elisha at this point, and things continue going with Elijah. We learn at this point the story of Naboth and his vineyard. I think our listeners learned about him maybe a month ago or so on the Watch Jerusalem broadcast. A vineyard has been found in Jezreel that could well have been this very vineyard of Naboth, and King Ahab desired to have this vineyard and buy it off Naboth. Long story short, Naboth didn't let him take this vineyard. It was against the law based on the Bible, the biblical rules of inheritance, and Queen Jezebel had him killed. So an interesting vineyard found in Jezreel that could have been this very vineyard. At this point, the prophet Elijah curses the family of Ahab and condemns them to death, essentially. And that we'll see happens during the life of Elisha. Now, the diplomatic situation at this point, we have the King Ahab of Israel clashing with King Ben-Hadad of Syria. A number of battles that took place, and Ben-Hadad of Syria himself is attested to archaeologically. So you have another king related to this time period who's been discovered in archaeological excavations. Now, if we read the Bible story, we discover that these battles were taking place, and eventually Ben-Hadad surrendered to Ahab, and they kind of developed somewhat of a chummy relationship. King Ahab let Ben-Hadad go free. Now, I mentioned the Kirk monolith earlier. This is interesting with respect to this story, because the monolith describes King Ahab and Ben-Hadad getting together their troops in support of the same campaign. So it's interesting to see that they've got this reconciliation after these battles, as the Bible attests to.
Yeah, it's not just saying that they exist, but it's actually correlating the actual biblical narrative. That's what a lot of people would say. I've read just a lot of scholars that will say that, yes, I guess these people in the Bible existed, but the biblical narrative is so much different than the narrative that we see displayed on these other Gentile kings' victory steles or announcements or monuments. And yet here we have an example of both the men existing and yet the relationship that they had really following on from what the scripture says as well. So I wonder if you can just talk about Elisha in the sense of his work after Elijah was taken out of the way, because he had some really close relationships with the most powerful men in this part of the world, be it the kings of Syria, which was just on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, on the Golan Heights, a little bit towards the north, towards Damascus. That was the territory of Syria today, Syria anciently as well. And also with the northern tribes, you mentioned Ahab. I wonder if you can mention more of the dealings that Elisha had with the kingdom of Syria.
Sure. Well, with the kingdom of Syria, around 850 BC, we've got the king of Syria attempting to stage attacks against Israel. But the Israelites seem to be aware of wherever those attacks would take place. And now the Bible documents that the king of Syria thought there was a traitor in his midst. Someone was giving away his position. But in actual fact, Elisha, so the advisors said to the king of Syria, there's a prophet called Elisha who was giving away this knowledge to the king of Israel, and he could give away anything that you said. And so the king of Syria attempted to arrest the prophet Elisha, and he sent a horde of troops down to tell Dothan, to the city of Dothan where Elisha lived. And that place, too, it turns out, has been discovered through archaeology. The Tel Dothan, as it's referred to today, is known about, has been discovered. And so Elisha there met the Syrian troops and then brought them before the Israelite king. God blinded the Syrians, as the Bible says, and Elisha was able to lead them basically right into the jaws of the Israelite army. And however, the Israelites spared the Syrians. Again.
We actually have a picture of that in this article, which I think is just really really helpful for people to, especially if you're detailing this story to your children. I mean, the Bible is full of instruction for parents to retell this history over and over and over again to their children so that they remember the miracles and the victories and even the disappointments as a result of sin. And we have some pictures here in this article that you can look at and that can really help you visualize where Elisha would have been with his one of his students and the hills surrounding where the fiery angels army of God would have been as well. So if you do have children, you want to explain this story to them, I do definitely encourage you to go ahead and read this from Chris and look at some of these pictures that we have. So we have also right at the end of Ahab's life, we have the story continuing. There was a different dynasty in power. What do we have archaeologically from that next dynasty after King Ahab? And it's got to do with Elisha as well.
Right. Well, this again goes back to the Nimshi inscriptions, because we have Jehoram essentially taking over the northern kingdom of Israel after King Ahab. And Elisha has received this commission to put down the dynasty of Ahab. And so he sends out one of his disciples saying, go and ordain Jehu, the grandson of Nimshi, to be the next king of Israel so that this prophecy can be fulfilled that Ahab's evil family will no longer continue on the throne. So Elisha, as we read in the Bible, Elisha's disciple goes out to this captain Jehu, who at that moment is engaged in a battle against the Syrian king Hazael. And there's an interesting story with that as well, because Elisha actually told Hazael that he would be the king of Syria. And suddenly in archaeology, we find documentation that Hazael is king of Syria, and that he sent his forces against the northern kingdom of Israel. So at this moment in the Bible story and in archaeology, we see a big clash again between Syria and the northern kingdom of Israel, and the kingdom of Judah comes in with Ahaziah as king to help the Israelites against the kingdom of Syria. Now, there's an artifact called the Tel Dan Stela, which belongs to Hazael, in which he talks about his battle against the Israelites. He talks about the deaths of Jehoram and Ahaziah, kings of Israel and Judah. Now, there's a lot more that goes into that than meets the eye on this inscription. And the Bible explains that these two did die, but it was at the hands of Jehu, who was ordained by that disciple of Elisha. So Elisha's disciple went and ordained this man, Jehu. This man immediately began his task of wiping out the family of Ahab. King Jehoram, of course, was a descendant of Ahab. Even the king of Judah, King Ahaziah, was a descendant himself linked to Ahab. And so these two men were killed right at the time of this battle, just as the Tel Dan stealer explains. These two men were killed, and of course, King Jehu goes and kills the other members of Ahab's family. Now, even related to King Jehu, there's an artifact also at the British Museum. I was able to see this one last week as well, describing King Jehu.
So at this time, if we're just bringing into the larger empire picture surrounding the northern tribes, we've been talking about Syria. They're the kings, Hazael Ben-Hadad, of Syria. But now when Jehu comes into power after he's knocked off the previous kings of the northern tribes, we have a different, larger empire that's becoming more threatening to the Israelites.
Right. We have the Assyrian Empire developing to the northeast. And this is really growing on the world scene, really a big power here. We know that 100 years later, the Assyrian kingdom will eventually defeat the kingdom of Israel. So at this point, it had just been Israel battling against the Syrians, essentially, during the 800s BC. But at this, toward the end of the century especially, you've got the Assyrians developing. And so Jehu, He finishes his battle with the Syrians. He wipes out Ahab's family. He has a righteous start to his reign, but things end up falling back. He ends up falling into paganism again, and he ends up paying tribute to the Assyrians. And this is shown on the Black Obelisk. And it's a big stone, big victory stone, belonging to the Assyrian king Shalmaneser III. Again, it's displayed in the British Museum, and it says on it, it refers to Jehu, son of Omri, son as in successor of Omri. We know that the northern kingdom was the house of Omri. So you've got these two biblical figures, two kings in their own right, Jehu and Omri, mentioned on this Assyrian stealer. And it shows Jehu essentially bowing down to the Assyrian king, delivering tribute to this king. Now, along with the inscription, there is a picture on this stone, showing a kneeling figure. It is believed that this may well be Jehu himself kneeling. If that's the case, then this would be the only visual depiction of an Israelite king on an inscription. But really interesting artifact. At the very least, it mentions Jehu. At the most, it shows him as well, kneeling down before the king of Assyria. And so we know that Jehu rejected God essentially and basically turned to the Assyrians for help and for security.
So as in the with the context of Elisha, I guess it was one of his one of Elisha's pupils. We know that he had he continued the traditions of Elijah with the schools of the prophets. There was likely a few of those that Elisha traveled to. If we would just get back to him for a bit, I think people would be interested that one of the most famous stories about Elisha is the fact that many young people were mocking him. I guess it was about 50 young people started mocking him, calling him Baldy Baldy. And then we have this entrance of a bear, a she-bear that comes out of nowhere and actually destroy some of these students. And what I found interesting is when I posted this article on Facebook, I had some really positive responses. And then somebody kind of tongue-in-cheek was like, well, have they found a bear yet? Have they found a bear yet? And then you even discussed this a little bit here in your article as well.
Right. Yeah. This article definitely isn't just about archaeology. It's about the whole picture, geography, even the animals that were in the area. And like you mentioned, there is that well-known story about Elisha, a bear coming into the area and basically wiping out these and wounding these teenagers that were really attacking into Elisha, essentially. And so some people may wonder, what is a bear doing in Israel? And you can look at the story of David and a bear features as well. And interestingly enough, bears still do live in this general Levant area. Now, they're believed to be extinct today in Israel, but there was a recent sighting in Lebanon in the wild of the Syrian brown bear, they're called. They used to be all throughout the Levant, throughout Israel, throughout Syria, throughout Lebanon. Again, one was found in Lebanon, but they're believed extinct in Israel and probably Syria as well. There are some in captivity in Israel, but again, they were very much prevalent in this area and still maybe, who knows, they're essentially thought to be near extinction, but in Lebanon, again, one was found. And that's the case also with the lion in terms of David's story. The lion was also quite prevalent in Israel right up to the time of the Crusaders. So you have quite a diverse animal spread, animal life in Israel at that time. And along with these miracles of Elisha at that time, right around the time of what was going on with this bear, he was just in the neighborhood of Jericho. That's where one of the schools of the prophets was. The people of the city came to Elisha saying, "The water is just terrible in this place. It's killing the land. We're not getting good crops at all." It was a barren wasteland, essentially, Jericho. And so Elisha asked for a container of salt to be brought to him. He poured it into the river springs, and the water was healed. And Jericho, it says in the Bible, quote, "to this day became a beautiful oasis." And it's interesting that even to this day, there is quite a lot of lush greenery that comes up in Jericho. It's part of a wider, very desert area, very arid climate. But Jericho itself, for at least much of the year, still retains a lot of greenery. And that's from an immense amount of spring water. I forget the exact numbers for how much spring water comes through Jericho, but it's amazing numbers. So it's interesting just to think about that and link that to Elisha's story as well.
So eventually Elisha, like all human beings, ends up dying. We don't have proof necessarily of his death archaeologically, but we do have some with the surrounding context. Could you just explain that for us?
Sure. Well, Elisha at this point is quite sick. He's nearing death, and Israel is essentially in the throes of another pagan ruler, and his name is Joash. And interestingly, this man also, and you keep seeing it again, name after name after name, this man too is attested to in archaeology. He's found on the stela of Adad-nirari III, and it mentions him as Joash of Samaria. So a direct link to this king that was on the scene during Elisha's time. Now, although he was a pagan king, there was at least one bright spot in his rule, and it's the fact that he visited Elisha and recognized him as a powerful man of God. And this is at least a man that has done incredible things for Israel. And so, like you started out at the top of this program with what Elisha said to the prophet Elijah, King Joash himself recited this to Elisha himself. He said, "Oh, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof." And that's really just a beautiful statement, even coming from especially a pagan king like that, for him to remember those roots and to remember the righteous leadership that Elisha provided. To be able to say that to him is really quite remarkable.
Okay, well, as you said in this article, that concludes the story of Elisha. But as you mentioned as well, it's not a story, it's a history. In this article, you go through at least 11 biblical figures that are featured in and around Elisha's life that have been discovered archaeologically. That's stunning to think of that many personalities that he came in contact with. And the Bible mentions them, and we do have proof outside the Bible of them as well. And of course, we also have the names of Nimshi and Elisha that maybe not are 100% confirmed yet, and yet the archaeological evidence does point at those being representative of those men. So thanks very much, Chris, for your article, for the effort of research that you put into this. I think they are very helpful for people to get the backstory from the Bible and just see how much has already been discovered that can really corroborate the biblical text. Thank you very much.
No problem. Been a pleasure.
that's about all we have time for today on Watch Jerusalem. You can read this article, Elisha, the Prophet, the Legend, the History, a Chronicle Told by the Bible, Validated by Archaeology, up right now on watchjerusalem.co.al. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks to our guest, Christopher Reams. We'll see you next week.